Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, this is Hack the Entrepreneur. Thank you so much for joining me again today. I am your host, John Naster, but you can call me Johnny. My guest today is a copywriter, funnel maker, and an entrepreneur. Back in 2014, my guest ran marketing and sales for a $10 million consulting firm. While there, one of his focuses was digital marketing. And after studying it relentlessly, he found out just how much he loved and enjoyed helping businesses grow. He is now the founder of GoodFunnel, where him and his team help small businesses grow their online sales channels with better messaging, copy, and email. Now, let's hack. Listen with all. I want to take a moment to thank today's sponsor, FreshBooks. The all-new FreshBooks makes ridiculously easy accounting software that's completely transformed how freelancers and small business owners deal with their day-to-day paperwork. Plus, it's been redesigned from the ground up and custom-built for exactly the way you work. You know what my favorite part is? It's that FreshBooks is for owners, not for accountants. They've designed their product for the owners who don't want to learn accounting and instead want to focus on what they love to do. From easy invoicing to invoice customization, insights when you send an email to a client, FreshBooks can show you whether they've even seen it or not, which puts an end to all the guessing games. Plus deposits. There's a super easy and handy deposit feature so you can invoice for a payment upfront when you're kicking off a project. And right now, FreshBooks is offering a 30-day unrestricted free trial to my listeners, you. To claim it, just go to freshbooks.com/hack and enter Hack the Entrepreneur in the How Did You Hear About Us section. That's freshbooks.com/hack to get started today. We are back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur, and today we have a very, very, very special guest. Liston, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm really excited to be here.
Awesome. I'm so glad you could join me, and I think we're going to have a lot of fun. So let's jump into it.
All right. I'm ready.
Liston, as an entrepreneur, can you tell me what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
So the one thing that I do, all right. So initially I think it was having a better understanding of how to sell professional services. So quick little background on me. I do marketing services, conversion rate optimization, messaging, copy, and marketing automation for clients. And one thing that I realized early on as I started to go after projects, and I would always ask people, John, and I recommend that everybody do this, why did I win or lose projects? And what I found when I won projects often is clients would tell me, your communication was better, you're faster, I felt like you understood me through the sales process. So I think, honestly, being able to, you know, come from a consulting background where I was in a sales role and business development role, that part was much more clear to me. I think over time, another thing that separates me from a lot of other people is just kind of understanding where the market moves and looking at myself more as kind of a management consultant and business partner to my clients rather than a solution provider or a service provider, right? Like my goal is to make sure that I understand their business goals and they're hitting their business goals.
Where the puck is heading, not where it is, maybe.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm Canadian, so, it's a hockey reference.
Right, yeah, exactly. Yeah, I was thinking of like a wide receiver reference for American football.
Oh, see, that's a classic Wayne Gretzky reference where people always asked him how he like got more goals than anybody else. He was just like, I always thought about where the puck was heading, not where it was.
Right, yes. Well, see, I'm originally from LA, so I know Wayne Gretzky.
There you go.
You don't have to tell me about Wayne Gretzky.
But that idea of when a customer or client comes to you and says, well, I need like this funnel built out for this, and you not taking it as an isolated sort of this funnel and just ignore the rest of it, you probably go deeper and try and understand what they truly like, what's the desire that they need fulfilled or the problem that they need fixed, more so than how can I build them this funnel?
Exactly. Like, what's the business case for this? So I'll give you a really obvious example that I think a lot of people listening to this will click with. So if you think about someone who builds websites, right, an obvious inclination may be for someone to get on the phone with a prospect and say, okay, like, you know, do you want a WordPress site or do you want a Drupal site or a Squarespace site? What features do you need? These kinds of questions, like, what is your color palette? Do you have that decided? When, you know, what I would recommend, and I obviously I'm not the only person who does this, but I think it starts to separate you from, say, 80 to 90% of other entrepreneurs or freelancers out there. You should be asking questions like, why do you need a website, right? What does this do for your business? Okay, you want all these features, like how does that impact your business? What kind of return do you expect? How will you measure your goals? How will you even know if you're hitting your goals? These kinds of questions, I think, start to position you, I think not just position you, but really put you in the light of someone who's going to be a partner and challenge people on how they think about their business, which, you know, for a consultant or a freelancer is a very important distinction to make.
Okay, since we're making distinctions, you sort of corrected or differentiated the conversation when you said freelancer or entrepreneur. What's the difference between a freelancer and an entrepreneur?
Yeah, so that's something I've wrestled with a lot because I started doing this thinking that I was an entrepreneur. And what I realized was, instead of getting rid of my boss, which I've done research on this topic, and I know that's one of the main drivers for people to go out and work for themselves, what I did instead was I collected more bosses over time. And I always had to find my next boss, meaning my next project. I think the difference between a freelancer and an entrepreneur is an entrepreneur is someone who thinks about building a business, a system by which they acquire new work, do work, and sell more work to customers. So whether that's a product, whether you're selling like software or, you know, shoes or whatever it is, right? You have to have a system of inputs to sell the thing, make the thing, deliver the thing, and repeat, right? Whereas with a freelancer, it's just you, it's just a job. So often what you're doing, instead of having a system to have a business that runs and is sort of bigger than you, it requires you, an individual, in order to keep the gears moving. And that's a very, very big distinction in my mind. So I don't want to claim that the way I approach it is perfect, but it's something that I think about often and I think everybody should.
Yeah. And we're not here to judge you whether it's perfect or not.
You can judge me, John. It's okay. I'm down with that.
So it's interesting though, because that distinction is so true. And then to have you sort of saying that you've struggled with it, wondering if you're a freelancer or an entrepreneur, because at the beginning, initially, like your one thing is you said that you had this better understanding of what you were providing to your customer from that sales background, and you knew how to position yourself and approach it in that way. To me, that, like, if you go back to like the whole e-myth sort of thing, there's like the technician and then there's like the entrepreneur.
Right.
The technician is the person who's just like, well, do you want a WordPress site or do you want, what color do you want? And I'll make that for you. Not caring about the bigger. But when you start saying sell, make, and deliver, that is entrepreneurship.
Yes. And I actually was thinking about the e-myth when I was saying that. If people haven't read it, I really recommend they do, because while you may not agree with McDonald's as a business or, you know, what they're delivering, I think he does go out of his way to make the point that they're a company that delivers consistent customer experiences. And I think that that's a really fantastic way to kind of look at it. And so if you're in professional services, it's, I'd say, quite a bit more complicated to do that rather than to make a hamburger, but still something that we should be thinking about very, very actively.
Exactly. Yeah. Michael Gerber, I can link to it in the show notes, but he was actually on the show a few weeks ago and It was an erratic, crazy episode, but it was really, really fun to have him on.
He's quite a character, yeah. And actually a local Oregonian. I live in Portland, Oregon, and he lives in Oregon too. So that makes me feel connected to him, even though it's fairly meaningless.
Fair enough, fair enough. All right, so your one thing is that better understanding of what your customer sort of needs. And then every sort of business expert now, Liston, talks about the 80-20 rule in business. You're supposed to find that 20% that gives you the 80% of results. You're supposed to do what you're good at and delegate the rest. Can you, Liston, please tell me something that you're absolutely not good at in your business?
Yeah, so I could tell you lots of things I'm not good at in my business. The one thing that I would say here is client delivery, even though I'm in professional services, is not my strong suit. I would say at least better than average, but probably expert marketer at this point. But sitting here and doing it all day for other people is not my competitive advantage over others, right? And so the reason I brought on a partner, so, you know, your question was not only what am I not the best at, but how do I delegate it? I brought on a partner in order to kind of oversee our delivery, right? He's a very talented marketer. I have full trust in him. He delivers great results to our clients. And so that's kind of where we've seen our partnership evolve, which has been really good for both of us. And so now I'd say it's been a little bit more than a year. So we're really hitting our stride together and understanding what our strengths and weaknesses are. And I know for sure that my strength is doing stuff like this, John, where I can talk to you and I know what I'm talking about legitimately. I can do marketing for clients. I can talk strategy with clients. This is what I'm excellent at. And then he's more on the technician side, to go back to the Michael Gerber reference, right? He wants to deliver great work and he's really, really good at it.
So what made you choose a partnership rather than hiring employees to fulfill that end of the business?
That's a good question. So I think there are a lot of things, but mainly I saw it as such a crucial function that I didn't want to outsource it to someone who may or may not be here in the next 6 months or 12 months. And, you know, my feeling was if we could partner together, it would be really fantastic for both of us in the long run. And we would have greater dividends over time by having a longer term concentrated effort together.
Nice. Fair enough. And that, I mean, that seems to be a case why lots of people seem to do, I mean, I think if someone has skin in the game, being a partner, they're obviously more dedicated in the success of the endeavor rather than just looking for the next hour of payment.
I 100% agree with that. Yep.
So let's move to projects, if we can, Liston. And so, I mean, because GoodFunnel is so recent, it might be interesting to talk about that as a project. So actually, let's do that. Let's talk about a year ago, before you had launched GoodFunnel, what was sort of the process you went through, and whether that was a written process or like an internal gut process. But obviously, we're surrounded by ideas for new businesses, things we can do, things that we're technicians at, all that sort of thing. But we have to determine what it is we should execute on. Mm-hmm. So can you tell me the process that you went through to decide that GoodFunnel was worth your time, energy, and resources?
Yeah, absolutely. So just to be clear, it was, I think, 3 years ago, 3.5 years ago that I started this. And my process at the time was honestly fairly mechanical. I really like to make lists. So pro and con lists and, you know, lists of where I think the market was at the time, who was offering which services at the time, how well people were executing on those services, where the price pressure is in the market, which is a complicated topic, which we could probably spend several days talking about. And what I did was I kind of listed out, I knew I wanted to be in digital marketing, and I knew that I wanted to do some combination of research and quantitative analysis. I knew I wanted to give results to clients that I could quantify. I could say, you know, there was an X percent difference in this test or that test, and here's why. And what I felt at the time, and I still feel this way, is a lot of people in marketing talk about, you know, either guaranteed return. So this is a common thing in performance marketing where people will say, you know, get a conversion increase or you don't pay us, or we'll be a partner on your project. This is more rare, but some people will go in with a partnership model and do a revenue split. Where I thought the market was weak is in emphasizing kind of this undercurrent of lean startup and kind of customer first, customer driven data and marketing. And so what we wanted to do was apply that kind of really rigorous analysis and research driven approach to marketing in an effort, first and foremost, to understand customers, who they are and why they buy. And then as a result of that information that we're able to gather and the insights we're able to gather, actually translate that into marketing that works. And so I'm happy to say we've been really successful at that. And we've made that work for a lot of different clients in different industries. And so, you know, when I started this, I mainly thought, I think as a lot of entrepreneurs do, you know, what would I be happy doing? So I think I took my first approach wasn't only what is the market looking for? I was also thinking, what kind of job would I want? And then I looked for market validation. Obviously, there's a ton of market validation for marketing services out there. We already know that's a thing that people want and have a habit of buying. So that's not something I had to convince anyone of. When I looked at all of the other competition, though, I think what really became clear is there was a space in the market that to me seemed really obvious, but no one else was really talking about it in this way.
Interesting. So you were looking for market validation, and market validation is not only that people will pay for the services, but also that there were other people doing it, being paid for it. So you weren't necessarily looking for a market that didn't have quote unquote competition in it.
Yeah, I would actually not recommend that people go to a market with no competition, because that actually means you have a very high chance of failure. Exactly. It's nice, right? Because I'm sure whoever's listening to this and thinking, well, I do have an idea that doesn't exist, or I'm going to a market that doesn't exist. I'm sure you have great ideas, but the truth is there's 7 billion people on the planet. There's a good chance someone else has thought of it and tried it. And so one piece of validation that we can use is if there are other people out there already successful at it, but there's still room in the market, say there's 5 incumbents, but it's a growing market, right? There's going to be plenty of space for you to go in.
Exactly. Well said. Well said. And so 3 years ago, you do the market validation. You decide that there's this gap in the market that you can fill and should fill because it's needed. How did you go about getting your first customers for GoodFunnel?
Oh boy, that's a good question. So first and foremost, hustle, right? Going around, and actually my first ever customer, I went to a job interview and I decided I didn't want the job. And actually it was what helped me decide I didn't want a job at all. I hope she's not listening. And I was like, man, I don't want to deal with this. But I did realize that they had an obvious hole that they needed filled, like a real business need. And so I said, hey, you know, I don't want the job that you're offering me, but you do have this big problem that you need to solve, and I think I can solve it for you. And so that was my first ever client who wrote me a check, which felt great, right? Because I was like, oh, maybe there's something to this. I also have had a lot of success with guest posting and sort of having a large online presence, all the normal ways people talk about doing that, but also being listed in marketplaces or on a list of qualified service providers in different kind of media locations, right? So similar to being on a podcast in that way, if I'm on someone's website, I get the benefit of all the traffic that they're driving, and I get exposed to more and more people. So I think those are the main ways. But the real answer to your question is my first customer came through an interview that I thankfully declined the job offer on.
But you turned it into a first client, and now you're getting customers through content marketing, basically, and being listed as a conversion rate optimizer or so.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, there's lots. Let's put it this way. This is my advice to anybody looking to get more clients, is to focus in an area where you have some advantage. So I feel I have an advantage talking to people, right? So whether it's at a live workshop or on a podcast or in a webinar, I do pretty well in this scenario. I do well at writing as well. So these are two areas where I focus a lot. And the more content and kind of footprint you create, the larger that is, the more chances you have to get lucky. I'll give you an example. 2 weeks ago, I started with a new client and I asked him, as I ask everybody, where did you find me? And he said, I found you on this software platform's website where they're recommending people who can build funnels. And I said, really, I've never heard of them. They've never talked to me. And somehow they found me somewhere online and included me. Now, that's not a business strategy because it's not repeatable. But the real point that I'm making is the bigger your footprint, the more chances you have to get lucky in these ways, right? The more chances someone's going to recommend you or you'll end up in a listing that you didn't expect.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, momentum breeds more momentum.
Right.
You being out there doing things causes people to see you, be aware of you, and ask you to do more things.
Yep.
It works. It really does work. All right. This has been an absolute blast, Liston. I want to wrap up on one final question for you. It's this idea I'm working with calling the entrepreneurial gap. It seems to be this gap we live in as entrepreneurs, as dreamers. On the inside, I think no matter what we accomplish, we always project our own personal success into the future. Meaning in 3 months when you hit that sales metric, in 6 months when you stand on that stage, whatever it happens to be, seconds before you hit that, you're going to set 10 bigger, loftier goals into the future. And I agree we have to do this to always be pushing forward. But sometimes we get caught in this gap where we look successful to everyone else, but to ourselves, it's always in front of us. So I would love it right now. You've been at this now for quite a few years and you have big places you want to go. But if you could stop and turn and look behind you, the highs, the lows, the wins and the losses, and just tell me how you feel about the whole entrepreneurial journey up until today.
That's a very large question. Here's what I'll say. The reason whether you succeed or fail, and of course you have your own definition for what that means. For some people, it's to be ultra wealthy, like multi-billionaire. To other people, that means I can pay the bills on my own terms and set my own schedule. No matter what you're after, I think the way I feel about it is it has been the absolute best way to understand myself, where my strengths and weaknesses are, where I am likely to fail, in what situations do I really thrive, what what areas should I focus? The true calculation of an opportunity cost. If I do this, I can't do that. That becomes really apparent as an entrepreneur because that's kind of a daily struggle. You know, I think for me, the way I feel about entrepreneurship after doing it for 3 years is it's absolutely the best way to learn about and understand yourself. And to, you know, I think it's also the fastest way to understand or begin to sort of grapple with the concept of how to make money, right? Like, how do I give people things that they want and they're willing to pay for? Those things are something you can't really pay for. You need to figure it out on your own. And for me, the biggest thing has just been learning about myself and where I'm great and where I'm not so great.
I love it. I love it. Brilliant answer, man. And that idea of just grappling with the idea of learning how to make money and trade it for services or goods. That's definitely a skill you can't learn in a book.
Definitely not.
All right, Liston, this has been, we got to talk about the business like in passing, but can you now specifically give the pitch to the audience about GoodFunnel and tell them where they can track you down online?
Sure thing. So at GoodFunnel, we do more research and learn about your customers, and then we give you more online conversions in various ways. You can check out what we do at goodfunnel.co. That's goodfunnel.co. We have a variety of free resources, and you can, ping me also, liston@goodfunnel.co if you want to talk.
Excellent. Liston at GoodFunnel. Are you on social media?
I am on social media, but I'm not the best at it. Okay. You can reach me at LAW4 at Law4 on Twitter. or I'm on Facebook. Also, if you put in Liston Witherell, I guarantee you that you would only find one person.
Excellent. On Twitter, goodfunnel.co is the main business. I'll see if I can track down some of those resources. I'll link to them in the show notes, as well as I'll link to The E-Myth Revisited, the book by Michael Gerber that we've talked about, plus his Going Deep episode from a few weeks ago. Casey, I haven't had a chance to sit down and listen to what it sounds like for me to talk to an 86, I believe, year old man. He gave me a lot of shit in that episode and yelled at me a few times. But it was really a lot of fun.
Now, to be fair, he has the energy of a 36-year-old. So
he really
does. Yeah.
So it's just how it was. And he made me throw out my questions like 30 seconds before we hit record. And we just had to have a conversation, he said. So
that's funny.
So yeah, it's been fun, Liston. Thank you so much for joining me. Thanks for opening up so much. I really appreciate it. And please just keep doing what you do.
Thank you, John.
FreshBooks makes ridiculously easy to use cloud accounting software that helps over 10 million entrepreneurs like you and me deal with all of the paperwork. Things like formatting and sending invoices, making sure you get paid on time, keeping track of receipts, and staying organized for the dreaded tax season. For your 30-day unrestricted free trial of the cloud accounting software used by over 10 million self-employed professionals, go to freshbooks.com/hack and enter Hack the Entrepreneur in the How Did You Hear About Us section. Well, that was a lot of fun. I really, really, really enjoyed that conversation. And I hope you did out there too. So we've reached the point in the show where I need to go back and listen to the conversation as a third party. And so I did. I went back through the conversation with Liston. And then I went back one more time. That second time through the conversation, there was something I had missed the first two times. And I'm not really sure how I did, but I did. Just cut me some slack. But when I heard it this other time, it was so very, very clear. It was that one thing that Liston said. Did you get it? Did you hear it? Let's do it. Let's find the hack.
An entrepreneur is someone who thinks about building a business, a system by which they acquire new work, do work, and sell more work to customers. So whether that's a product, whether you're selling like software or, you know, shoes or whatever it is, right? You have to have a system of inputs to sell the thing, make the thing, deliver the thing, and repeat.
And that's the hack. Liston, Liston, Liston. I love this. I love the simplicity and I love the clarity of this. An entrepreneur is someone who creates a business around a system of inputs, right? Has a system to acquire work, do the work, and then sell more work. Unlike, as you go on to say, a freelancer who gets a job, does it, goes and finds the next job, does it, goes and finds the next one. An entrepreneur thinks in systems, meaning that you might be the one as a solo entrepreneur doing all of the systems, the system of acquiring the work, doing the work, and then acquiring more work, or the sell, make, deliver aspect of it. But you are putting in systems into place so that you can, one at a time, take yourself out of one of those systems and put somebody else in place, allowing the business to either scale, if that's what you're looking for, but not necessarily. It could also be just to remove you from the business and have a business continuing to run, which a freelancer can't do. They can't do that until they start thinking like an entrepreneur and removing themselves from the business. You can't remove yourself from a business without systems in place to do it. So remember this, the simplicity of it, right? So it's the systems of acquiring work and then doing the work, or as he says, the system of inputs to sell the work, make the work, and then deliver the work. And then that continues. That's just a cycle that needs to just continue. And if you break it into those three parts and then create systems for each one, and a system is literally just you writing out how you do every single step of the way and usually why, and your thinking behind it. Then when you have these systems in place, think about which one you want to replace yourself in first, then second, then third. By the time that third one comes around, you are out of it and your business continues to run without you. Liston. Thank you so very much. Well, that was a lot of fun. I enjoyed that. I really did. Hacktheentrepreneur.com is the website. Head over there. Get onto the email list. It's the place to be. It really, really is. Yep. All right. It's been fun. I've taken enough of your time today. I truly 100% appreciate you stopping by and taking the time to hang out here today. It's really cool of you. Yeah. All right. It's been fun. Thank you very much. And please, until next time, keep hacking the entrepreneur.